This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Hey. They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Friends and neighbors, this is episode number 47 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are coming to you this week with a set of brand new microphones.
Yes.
Thanks to our lovely Patreon supporters and all of their contributions to our little fund. We spent the last 15 minutes just trying to figure out how to use them. So this episode, hopefully this episode turns out fine. If it doesn't, let us know, and we can certainly try to tweak anything that might be wrong. Speaking of Patreon, we have new sponsors this week. Thank you so much to Michael and Joachim, I hope I pronounced that correctly, for supporting our Patreon. We really do appreciate that. Woman of Excellence this week is Jess Sturba. She is a writer from Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn! Yay! No love for Brooklyn, Hallie?
I actually didn't spend a whole lot of time in Brooklyn. My ancestors are from the Bronx and Queens.
Oh, sorry. I just assumed like New York was just one place. I guess I was wrong. But anyway.
Many distinct neighborhoods.
Okay, gotcha. Anyways, Jess is from Brooklyn, New York. She covers EDH and magic culture over at Hipsters of the Coast and Star City Games. Her other interests include criminology, social justice, and cats. She's definitely become my go-to person for when I want to discuss anything trans-related or if I just need advice in general. You can find her on Twitter at Jailina. That is J-L-I-N-A. We're going to start by covering some news that took place last week. Christopher Rush and Wayne Gregory, who are both known artists of Magic the Gathering, passed away, I believe, within a day of each other, which was incredibly sad. The mothership put all of their content on hold on Friday to post these memorial pages to them where people were recounting their experiences with them, and they also made a lot of their wallpaper available where you could get wallpaper for some of their more popular art pieces. Chris in particular is responsible for iconic pieces like Black Lotus, Lightning Bolt, and Brainstorm. It was also his idea to make full art lands. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And he also drew the mana symbols that we now know and love. Wayne illustrated over 108 different magic cards, including all of the commands, like Profane Command, Cryptic Command.
Mm-hmm.
He also produced artwork for other games, such as the Wheel of Time role-playing game and Warhammer Fantasy roleplay. You know, Chris, you're probably the closest thing that we have to, like, you know, an art lover, you know, with all of your playmats and things like that. So what did you think when you heard this news?
I was, like, legit surprised and very, very sad because we had just gone to Oakland and there were some cards that I was sad that I didn't bring with me to have Chris sign. I was like, well, you know, he's kind of like RK Post. I'll just roll through the next GP and he'll be there and I'll get them signed then and, you know, get to talk to him then. And now we won't get another chance. And so it was just kind of sad to not... that we're not going to see him there anymore. You know, he's always been like a friendly face, and I think he's touched a lot of people with his art, with his friendship, and it's just sad to know that he's not going to be around anymore.
Hallie and Katie, do you have any thoughts on this?
I had met Chris a few different times, and I actually went on his Facebook when I heard the news and saw that he was planning on being at an event at the end of February, and I was pretty... I mean, it's just sad to see somebody that, you know, you see at certain events, and, I mean, he doesn't know who I am, but I've met him a few times, and just a familiar face that's not going to be around anymore is rough to hear.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to meet Chris, but he definitely was a stalwart of the artist community and is, you know, responsible for several of my favorite cards, Brainstorm and Lightning Bolt among them, so I am very sad to see him go.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of good points. You know, the feeling that we just assume that something is always going to be there. You know, like you said, Chris, you were so used to just seeing RK posted every GP, and if I don't get my card signed this time, I'll catch him in Houston, I'll catch him in DC, and, you know, you sometimes, you know, you don't think that you may not see them again, and to, you know, it really inspires you to kind of appreciate things more than you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that this awoke in me was this feeling of nostalgia, because when I really think about it, when I think back to seventh grade and my friend Samantha's binder and seeing all of those magic cards for the first time, it was really the art that pulled me in. Like, I remember looking at cards like Siobhan Dragon and Jester's Cap and being like, what are these? I'd never seen anything like that before. And I actually sent her a private message. I'm still friends with the girl who got me into the game. And I told her that Chris had passed away, and she was just devastated. She was like, I loved his work. I grew as an artist by following him. And I feel like we don't really hear that anymore. Like, no shade to like the current art, but I just don't feel like I hear magic art got me into the game as much as we did in the old days. Mm-hmm. It's just something I feel we don't see very much of. And so for me, it was really a nostalgic kick of just remembering where I was when I first saw these cards and how they made me feel. This past weekend on Saturday was game day. Did you guys go?
Yep.
Okay. So Hallie, why don't you kick us off? How was your game day?
My game day was okay. I had kind of a mediocre finish, but because we had a very small game day, I made top 8 and got that sweet jewelry end promo. I was test driving a Mardu Dragons deck that I'm trying to brew up. I had played a bit of Mardu in the past, but wasn't sure how I would do against Rally, so then I started playing Tom Ross's Black-Red Dragons list, and, you know, I liked some parts of it. I think Thunderbreak Regent and Kolaghan are very well positioned in the meta right now, but the overall list felt like it was very difficult to, you know, come back if you were ever behind. So I thought, okay, what happens if I port these cards into this sort of Mardu shell where I also get to play Crackling Doom and Kolaghan's Command and all these other really strong cards and just sort of see what happens? And unfortunately, the mana base isn't exactly where I want it to be right now. But I had a good time at game day. I played some really great opponents. I got to hang out with my friend Ian Dixon, who recently moved to the Seattle area. So that was a lot of fun. And yeah, I just really enjoyed this game day.
Now, you're going to Houston in 2 weeks, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Is this what you're thinking of taking, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I'm going to play a Mardu deck of some flavor. Several people have sent lists to me, more aggressive Mardu decks, Mardu green lists, and that is sort of what I'm looking to play. I know Rally is kind of the deck du jour right now, and a lot of people who haven't played it are starting to pick it up in hopes of, you know, doing well at an event. But, you know, I was actually reading LSV's tournament report from the recent Pro Tour, and he made a point about, you know, only playing a deck that he knew that he would enjoy at the event. And I really took that to heart, and I think that I do want to play something in my wheelhouse. I don't want to force myself to learn how to play Rally if it isn't something that I think I would personally enjoy. Like, I would rather play a deck that I like, and right now Mardu is a deck that I really like.
How's your Rally matchup?
It is very dependent on certain things. I'm trying to make room for Kalidus in, you know, whatever Mardu deck I end up playing, because I think Kalidus is great in the matchup. I did get to play against Rally at game day, and I did win, but my opponent made a couple mistakes that I was able to capitalize on, so I'm not really sure how the matchup is going forward, but I intend to practice it a lot.
Chris, Katie, did you guys go to game day?
No, I couldn't go because of Christopher Preston's surprise party.
Oh, man.
I know, they started it at 5. I know, I was like, why is it your birthday?
I remember when we saw him at your local game store and we gave him a sticker and he was like, my face should be on the sticker. He's like, you've talked about me on your show. And he seems to think that warrants him a spot. So when our next batch of stickers comes out, we may have to make room for a fifth or for other, you know, people that have influenced us.
I was going to say his head's so big it wouldn't fit on there.
Those were your words, not mine, Chris. I love you.
I didn't play in either of our game days, but I did swing by Saturday just to watch what was going on in the top 8. And my friend and testing partner, Kobe, won both of our game days back-to-back. So he's got 2 champion mats now.
Wow. With the same deck?
Yep. He played Rally.
Oh.
So I don't know if we're on speaking terms about that or not, but I don't know what he's going to do with 2 mats. I guess he could stack them on top of each other and play with both of them, but...
Or...
yeah, I was very proud of him. And I think we had really good turnouts both days, so...
I think Chris is interested in one of those mats.
I am, because our friend Lee, he ended up winning game day on Sunday, and I was like, does he still have the mat? And they were like, no. And I'm like, fuck. And then, actually, one of our listeners who lives around here, she won game day on Saturday. Her name is Arielle, and she's pretty awesome. So I was like, you took it down. I'm so proud of you. So, yeah.
I'm so proud of you. What do you do with the playmat?
And she played goblins, and I guess it was very well positioned.
Somebody was playing goblins at my local game store, so I decided to YOLO this. I took a blue-red tutelage to game day. I heard that.
Sorry.
it's the gain on the microphone. That's what it is. Yep. So, I've been playing Esper Dragons for a while, but Esper Dragons is just really bad right now. You know, Crackling Doom is everywhere. Goblin Murk Dweller, Dark Dwellers. I mean, there's just so many ways to get Crackling Doom back. And Self-Inflicted Wound is a thing. And it's a really bad environment to be playing dragons. Bay was in the mocks this past weekend and playing, like, Bore Me to Tears control. Like, he was playing Esper with, like, Narset. And I'm like, it was literally, like, 4 Jace, Narset, 4 Shambling Bend.
Sweet.
And I'm like, how do you win with this? Like, and I was like, I'm going to trust in his wisdom, but it looks kind of sketchy. I think Esper is kind of not really good right now. And so I tend to think of game day as more of a casual event anyways. So I was like, you know what? I'll spend $20 and buy some commons and uncommons that I don't have and build tutelage. And the first game went really well. I did well with it at FNM, but then I faced two decks that were just sort of natural foils for me. My second round opponent was playing a pure colorless deck. There was not a single mana symbol that wasn't colorless to be found. So, I'm having to tutelage the hard way. I'm not getting the triggers. I'm not getting the chain effect. It's just two cards every time. I did manage to take him to game three, but it was just really hard. You know, again, the way tutelage wins is by getting lucky on milling two cards of the same color, and that just wasn't going to happen with his deck. My third round opponent was playing a Sidisi deck, and I didn't know that tutelage feeds Sidisi. So as I'm like milling with tutelage, I'm like I'm triggering. So I'm like, oh, do it again, and I'm kind of clapping like, this is so much fun. And he's like, so mill two, make a zombie. And I'm like, no, that's when you do it. This has been. Can I see that card? And then I look at the card, and I'm like, oh, anytime the card goes in your graveyard, fuck. So then it's like mill two zombie, mill two, they're the same color, mill two again. Oh, that gets me a zombie. And then by the time I was done, he had like 6 zombies in Sidisi. And he was also running Kiora. He was very close to getting the octopus assesses. and then he played the spiciest meatball of all. And I thought that when I saw him play this, I just assumed that he brought it in for me. So I get him down to like a dozen cards or so. And I think I've got this game. I'm feeling really good. And all of a sudden he goes, Inverter of Truth. For those playing the home game, that is 2/2 black, and it's a 6/6 flyer from Oath. And when it comes into play, you exile your library, and then your graveyard becomes your library. So because I had milled him to oblivion, he had this really fat graveyard, which now was his library. And he was like, hey, that's really great, do it again. And I'm just like, I don't have enough cards to do this. And so both these decks were just sort of natural foils for me that I couldn't have planned on. And it was just a bad scene. But I had a lot of fun. I don't think the deck is bad per se. I just think that, you know, with Devoid being everywhere and colorless cards, it's just not a good time for a deck like that. But I did enjoy myself. And then I treated myself to, I went and saw Deadpool after game day, which was quite good. So I managed to turn the day around. And then on Sunday, we had our first ever group stream.
Woohoo!
What?
Yay! Thanks, again, to our Patreon subscribers for unlocking that milestone goal. Hallie, you did most of the piloting for that event, so why don't you tell our listeners how it went?
Sure. So we were playing in the Pro Tour Gauntlet, which is the new event type on Magic Online, where you get to play a random deck that did well at the Pro Tour against 3 other random decks in a 3-round Swiss. And we got Blue Moon, which was pretty awesome because Chris and Katie and I all enjoy playing decks of that style. Our win conditions were basically Batterskull, Snapcaster, and Burn Spells. Not like you need any other win conditions.
I was so lost.
And we beat Eldrazi in our first and second rounds. We played against Blue-Red Eldrazi in the first round and Frank Lepore's Processor Eldrazi deck in the second round. Turns out that our, you know, early burn spells and early interaction was very good, and we were able to land a lot of turn 3 blood wounds, which prevented our opponents from casting any of their spells. So that was pretty nice. And then in the last match, we got kind of run over by Zoo, though we did have one epic moment in game two where we got them to overcommit into an Anger of the Gods.
Yeah, we did.
That was a 4-for-1, wasn't it?
It was a 4-for-1, yeah. We had to pay one extra because of Thalia, but, like, who cares? Still got a 4-for-1.
I think we were positively giddy when we were doing it. We're like, oh, no, no, no. And I think one of our viewers was like, you know, I love y'all, but y'all deserve to lose for that.
Like, we totally did.
We were so giddy and we were so confident. I was really surprised by how well Blood Moon did. Like, I'd heard people say, you know, Blood Moon is not the answer to these Eldrazi decks. And, you know, it seemed like especially the second one, all their Eldrazi had that colorless symbol. And so if they didn't have colorless mana, or they weren't able to somehow sneak out some Scions, they had no way of, they could maybe cast an Endless One. I think they could cast a Mimic, but like a lot of their spells were really shut off.
Yeah, the only way they were really able to do anything was, like, using Relic of Progenitus and Scrabbling Claws to exile cards from our graveyard to then feed their Blight Herder to then get Scions, but it was kind of too little too late at that point.
Yeah, it definitely just kind of destroyed their deck. I don't know, I'm hoping that it's a sleeper and it doesn't really go up in price any more than it already has, so we can't talk it up too much.
Oh, right. Because I think you guys said that you liked it so much that you would totally play this.
Oh, yeah. I would totally play this.
Yep, I'm putting it together in paper here this week.
Oh, man. I had a lot of fun, though. You know, it was really nice to connect with our viewers and our listeners, of course. And I think, you know, we obviously have fun together. And so, you know, this was something I really, really enjoyed. And I just thought it went really well. Like, I admitted, you know, I don't stream very much. And I know we've talked about this before, but streaming is hard.
Mm-hmm. It is. It was really funny when Gabby put out her streaming video, and she posted it on Facebook, like, hey guys, I put out this video today. Megan Wolf commented because the icon for the link was a picture of Endless One. Megan said something like, this is the number of arms that you have in order to stream properly.
Yeah, can we talk about how great those videos were?
Oh my god, they were so good.
Yeah, if you haven't seen them, go check them out on YouTube or the Mothership. Gabby made two videos, and she really broke it down, all the way down to how to determine what your byte rate is, or your bit rate, and how to determine how many, you know, frames per second you need, and your buffer, and how to, you know, slide your layout in place, and how to crop, and just little things that nobody really ever tells you when they tell you to start streaming. And I spent a good 3 hours watching her videos and rewinding parts to make sure I understood them, and before I knew it, I had a pretty simple but usable layout, and I did a couple practice streams this weekend, and I felt really good about it.
Yeah, I went down the rabbit hole pretty deep. She was like, this is how you make a layout, and then, or an overlay, and I went to YouTube, and then I spent like an hour watching videos on how to make an overlay, and then I texted my brother, because we lived together, and I was like, do we have an extra monitor? And I went and found another monitor in our office, and I came and set it up, and I was like, I'm going to use this until we move out, don't worry. But I definitely went down the streaming rabbit hole today, so hopefully that's something that I actually do now here in the future.
Yeah, but it's tough, though. It's like, you know, so you have to sort of juggle all of the things, and you have to pay attention to your game, and then if you decide to have music, you know, that's one thing, and then you have the chat talking to you, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to completely be playing based on what they tell you. Like, you don't want to be sitting there and waiting for them to tell you what to do, but you also don't necessarily want to be ignoring them. And, like, if you get any new subscribers, I know Gabby and Mrs. Mulligan have these big alerts that pop up on the screen, and it's like you have to acknowledge the new subscribers, and then it's a lot.
Yes, it's a lot.
Yeah, and then they're keeping you a schedule, and then if anything goes, if you're not feeling well and everything like that, like, I have a new respect for streamers, you know, after that video and after just watching some of the people that we know do it.
And then how do you be entertaining for so long?
Yeah!
Like, you're just sitting there and you're like, well, I don't know what to say now because it's just me here still. I don't know, it seems hard.
Yeah,
I just talk to myself the whole time.
Oh, man. See, but then I worry that, like, you know, the conversations that I have with myself, I don't know if I'd want anyone to hear. You know, because, like, you're alone and you're home and you're just kind of, you know, in my case, I'm particularly goofy when I'm by myself. So, like, if somebody does something I don't like, I'll be like, oh, bitch, did you just do that? And I'll be like, oh, You're going to hear me being all draggy and crazy and, oh God, I'm so sorry. Like, I almost feel like I should be somebody else, because if I were to talk to myself the way I talk to myself, it would kind of scare people and they'd be like, she's nuts. I know last night I got the bright idea that I was going to stream kind of later on in the evening and play like some 90s R&B. And because Chris knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If you ever listen to like R&B radio stations and they have like a late night playlist, they call themselves The Quiet Storm. And there's usually a guy with like a really deep voice. It's like, you're listening to The Quiet Storm. And like something like that. And I was like, oh, well, I use a card called Lightning Storm. So why don't I call it The Quiet Lightning Storm? It's going to be awesome. And so I decided to play like some 90s R&B while I was streaming ad nauseum. And then like, I wasn't really in control of the playlist. So all of a sudden, Whitney Houston's Greatest Love of All comes on. And I'm like,
yes.
Let's go to TLC. Let's go to something that people actually know, because they're like, we don't know this. We can't relate to this. And so, I definitely feel like I have to kind of tailor myself when I'm streaming, because the people don't really know what's going on. but yeah, streaming is a lot of fun, and I look forward to seeing people, you know, learn something from Gabby's videos and start streaming. Two announcements today. Dual Deck's Blessed versus Cursed. This seemed to confirm some things about Shadows Over Innistrad, which we learned from some leaks that have been taking place lately. More leaks. What's going on with all these leaks?
There's so many. It's leaking. So
gotta plug them up.
Gotta plug them up, man. So the Dual Deck seems to confirm that we are looking at some new mechanics. There's going to be a mechanic called Delirium, which kind of reminds me of Tarmogoyf in a way, where spells will do the thing that they normally do. So, for example, there's a creature here called Toppelgeist, and Toppelgeist says when it enters the battlefield, tap a target creature an opponent controls. If you have Delirium active, meaning at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, you can tap a target creature that player controls. So it kind of gives you these added effects if you have certain cards in your graveyard. And it seems to confirm, the dual decks seem to confirm that this is something we will be seeing in Shadows Over Innistrad. It does look like the Transform cards are back. We do see some humans that turn into werewolves. There's also a neat mechanic here called Investigate. And this one appears to be, it's an instant, and then, so this is an instant called Expose Evil for 1/1 colorless. You can tap up to 2 target creatures, and then Investigate happens, put a colorless clue artifact token onto the battlefield with 2 colorless, sacrifice this artifact, draw a card. Kind of reminds me of the keys that we had in, was it Dragon's Maze, or the Clue Stones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what that reminds me of. I hope somebody makes a token of that with, like, the paw from Blue's Clues. Wouldn't that be dope? Like, just, there's my clue token, or maybe like some from the actual game of Clue. Like, here's my rope, here's my wrench. I'm gonna sacrifice that and draw a card. I think that'd be cool.
Professor Plum,
right? It was Professor Plum on Zendikar with the harpoon. Like,
Clue got real.
Clue got real, man. Or that the thing that Gideon uses. Like, give that to Miss Scarlet. I'm sure she'd do some damage. So, I mean, have you guys taken a look at these spoilers? Like, are you excited about the new set?
I am excited, yeah. I'm really happy that we're getting a Geist of St. Traft reprint.
Oh, yay! Did you see that Dread Return reprint, though? Oh, I get it. Geist of St. Traft. That's cool. Mine's banned in formats, I'll have you know. I have to admit, I kind of changed my mind about that. Randy Bueller has been running this No Modern Showdown on his stream. It's really awesome. You should check it out. And it happened to be Dredge was one of the players, and it was like Dredge versus Affinity. And Affinity was able to play all of their artifact lands and play Keeper of the Vault, is it? The black creature that's banned anytime.
Disciple of the Vault?
Disciple of the Vault, yeah. And I didn't think Dredge was going to win that, but I guess Dredge returning on turn 3 for like a Sphinx of the Winds or something, I guess, wins you the game. So I was like, maybe Dread Return is a little powerful. Like, I'm gonna... Maybe people had a point. So the dual decks, you know, that announcement came out. Shadows Over Innistrad, we've certainly seen some leaks from that. They also announced a new set called Eternal Masters, yes, which is going to be coming out in June, release date of June 10th, available on Magic Online June 17th. The aim of this set seems to be to give people access to cards that they feel are preventing them from getting into Modern, like Force of Will, Wasteland, things of that nature. It doesn't seem like there's a GP tied to this. However, there is a Legacy GP that same weekend. It's not classified as, like, GP, you know, Eternal Masters like we've had with Modern Masters before, but it seems like people are excited about this set. What did you guys think?
It felt like the day started out with people being like, yeah, this is exciting. Now we don't have anything to complain about. Like, I think I saw a tweet that literally said, we don't have anything to complain about now. And then at the end of the day, I kept seeing people complaining. And I was like, they just can't make you guys happy. And they were like, they should have reprinted the reserved list and the packs are going to be too expensive. And I was like, you guys are all such Magic players here. but I'm excited for it. I don't know. I think every time they do something like this, I get a little excited because it's something out of the norm and something that I want to play. And they also, I heard, you can have Eternal Masters be a PPTQ format when it comes out. So I think that'll be cool. I hope that one of our local-ish stores does that.
Yeah, one of our stores has already said they're doing one, so I'm excited for that.
That would make me interested in a sealed PPTQ. I would never normally go to one, but I was like, this, we can talk.
They'd have to be expensive, though, right? Like, you're paying for six packs and plus, like, prize money, and if they're, like, $10 a pack, then, I don't know, like, $60 to $75?
I think people were estimating, so MSRP is $10. So is that, I'm not really clear on that. So does that mean that's what stores are going to sell them for, or that's, like, the suggested price?
That's the suggested
price. Yeah, the SP in MSRP stands for suggested price, yeah.
Got it. So in your experience, how much do you think stores might jack that up? Like $2-3?
In my experience, most of the Modern Masters events that I went to, or the drafts or the sealed tournaments, were between $30 and $50, like $30 for draft, $50 for sealed. I would expect something similar from Eternal Masters.
Okay. And would you draft this format?
Absolutely, yeah. I've never had a chance to draft Force of Will except in, you know, the Magic Online cube, so that sounds like a lot of fun.
What about the people who are coming at this, that damned MTG Finance, that frickin' hashtag, the people who are saying that this is going to make reserved list cards cost more, the people who are saying that this really isn't going to lower the barrier to Legacy, that it's not the Force of Wills that people are having a problem with, it's not the Wastelands, it's the Underground Seas, it's the Tropical Islands, it's the Candelabra of Taunos. You know, do you think that they have a point? Like, will this actually do anything for Legacy, like for getting more people into it?
I mean, it could, depending on what people want, what people need. I mean, not everyone wants to play, you know, the same deck. I mean, I don't need any Underground Seas that I'm aware of. I don't even think the deck that I want to build even runs them. So I guess that's up to each individual person to decide. I try not to pay attention to MTG Finance too much because it just makes my head hurt. Like, it's too much for me to handle.
I'm excited to try and get some staples from it. Like, I already have my Force of Wills and stuff, but I'm hoping, like, maybe we'll see a Jace reprint or, you know, I still need some true name Nemesis.
Nemesis,
that's probably more correct. But I'm excited, you know, regardless of if I need the cards or not, but I do think that it's a good stepping stone for people to get into the format more and maybe just make it more of a big deal now that our store isn't allowed to have the proxy tournaments. Even if they're not sanctioned, our Legacy has fallen off quite a bit, so that's unfortunate because a lot of people were working towards their decks and just had like a couple proxies, but without those proxies it doesn't really work. So I'm hoping that this can kind of rejuvenate our scene locally.
Yeah, even based on what we've seen so far, we know that Force of Will and Wasteland are going to be in the set. And a lot of new Legacy players, if they're not picking up Burn, they're picking up Merfolk. And the two most expensive cards in Merfolk are Wasteland and Force of Will. So I think it's going to allow a lot of players to get in at the ground level and hopefully trade up for those staples that aren't being reprinted in this set.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter brought up a really good point. He was like, you know, he is somebody who is a collector. He's somebody who has a lot of these cards. And he said, you know, I'm fine at taking the hit on this. I'm fine with my cards losing value if it means that other people can actually enjoy them. Because what is the point of having, you know, a playset of Force of Will that's worth so much money if no one's using them? If you can't even use them, if you can't take them to a GP, you can't take them to an Eternal Extravaganza, what's the damn point? And I thought that was a really refreshing perspective because there was so much about, well, my prices, my collection, my value, you know, what are you doing with it, though? Like, what are you really doing with these cards? They're sitting there. They're not doing anything for you until you have some kind of life event, and then you need to sell them. And I thought that was a really great attitude. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I agree that the reserved list cards may go up in value, but it certainly can't hurt to have cheaper cards like these. You know, you may still have to pay $200 a piece for an Underground Sea for two of them. I think I was looking at Building Storm, Ad Nauseam Tendrils, and I think it required two of them. But if I don't have to pay as much for Force of Wills or Wastelands for another deck, I'm still saving money somehow. And I think that when you are working towards a really expensive deck, every little bit helps. And so to say that these cards and their possibly lower prices won't help at all, I think is kind of wrong.
I'll buy a box.
Oh yeah, you will?
Probably.
Okay. You'll have to do another one of your unboxing videos.
Yeah, either that or I'll have to draft it. Like, I'd have to, like, get together with some friends and be like, I keep all the cards, but you can play with them if you want.
Well, you just tell us what GP and we will meet you there. Speaking of saving up money to buy expensive decks, our friend Saffron Olive wrote a post at MTG Goldfish called The Modern Dilemma. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Modern lately, and it went from being how the format is broken now because of all the Eldrazi decks to, you know, the cost of Modern. You know, this discussion is coming up again, and, you know, he kind of poses the question of what would you tell a new player who's thinking of getting into competitive Modern? You know, would you encourage them to do so, or would you kind of steer them away from that? And he goes on to illustrate trends in the format about how, you know, if you buy into a certain deck, how long are you really going to be able to play that deck before the bannings come and take it away? So how would you guys answer that question? Like, if you had somebody in your life who was saying, I'm thinking of getting into Modern, what advice would you give them?
Oh boy, this is like my life right now. So, me and Chris have a friend named Kevin who he got into Standard. He likes Standard well enough, but we were all doing Modern, so he's like, I want to do Modern too. And he has literally gone off the deep end about Modern. And we're trying to, like, corral him into just one spot to be like, okay, well, what do you want to do in Modern? Like, is there a deck you want to play? Don't go all, you know, crazy. So some advice that, like, I've personally given him is, you know, decide what deck you want to play and kind of stick with it. Don't just be jumping from one deck to another if you don't have the cards, which is one thing that Saffron Olive brought up in his article, was invest in cards instead of decks. And I can definitely get behind that idea, because that's sort of what I've inadvertently done. I'll be like, I want this card. Can I use this in multiple decks? If I do invest the money in this, you know, will I get my money's worth out of it? Or is it something where I can only use it in one particular deck? So that's something that we're trying to kind of do collectively, is be like, you know, can we lend people cards so that they can see if they like the deck first, and then they can invest in the rest of the deck if they want to. And it's when I try to think back to, like, me a year ago when I started playing Modern, I think what I started, like, last March or last April, so about a year ago, I look at it in a completely different way now, just because now that I've seen, you know, Splinter Twin get banned while I was playing. I mean, I came in right after Pod got banned, so that meant nothing to me. And to just look at decks and be like, okay, there could be a day where maybe my Tron lands get banned. Who knows? Do I think that would happen? Probably not. But, you know, there are people that call for it. There are people that think that could be a thing, and then that would fall apart. Like, what would I do instead? You know, so having other cards to build decks from is definitely something good to fall back on. I thought it was interesting that he brought up the point about how Modern seems to be becoming a rotating format, when previously you might not have been able to say that about it. But I can see what he's getting at. And he also mentioned maybe not playing competitive Modern. And, like, my friend Kevin, he's like, let's go to Detroit. I want to go to all the big events. And it's like, okay. But, you know, maybe you should get in some more reps at FNM first and, like, see, you know, do you like this deck? Do you like playing Modern? Are you ready to hang with, you know, what's possibly going to be there. And so I liked that he kind of broke it down to, like, smaller levels to be like, you know, it's fine if you're just winning an FNM. You don't have to go play a competitive event if you don't want to. Maybe you can get by with, like, a Tier 3 deck. I mean, hell, I'm playing Mono Blue Tron. How many people actually play that deck? Not that many. I mean, I go to events and I'm like, oh, shit, I haven't seen Blue Tron in forever. I'm like, yeah. And it just feels good. So, you know, I don't know. He's all over the place, so we're just trying to help him. But those are some things that I took away from the article that I'm definitely going to share with him, like things I have not already imparted to him, to be like, you need to read this as you're going on your modern adventure and and see, like, if you agree or disagree with this or if this helps you in some way.
Yeah, I felt like when I read it, I kept thinking of, we've had, I think, two people at our local game store that I know of that were like, I want to play Modern. This is the deck I'm going to build. And then they build it and they invest all the money in it. And then they play it for like two tournaments and they're like, oh, wait, this isn't fun to play. I don't like this. So my advice would be to, like, please proxy the deck and play it for, like, against a bunch of people, not just your one friend and you happen to beat their deck over and over, but try and play a bunch of the matchups. You know, if you are looking to get competitive with Modern, then I would hope that you would not invest all your eggs in one basket. And then also, like, a Tier 1 deck is, like, Burn. And Burn is not very expensive. And, you know, once you get the lands for Modern, other things become a lot more accessible. And so if you're going to chip away at stuff, I would chip away at lands. But, you know, in Burn, you could play really just Mono Red Burn with only Mountains if you don't have fetch lands. But taking decks and making them more monetarily accessible, I think, is a doable thing that a lot of people don't think about. So test your deck and invest in a deck you really, really want after you know that you like it.
Yeah, I definitely took the buy cards, not a deck approach to Modern, and it's worked out pretty well for me. I started getting into Modern about 2 or 3 years ago, and what I basically did was trade in my standard cards for cards that I knew would be good in Modern. I traded for fetch lands, I traded for Path to Exile, I traded for Kitchen Finks, I traded for Noble Hierarchs, cards that just sort of went in a lot of decks, as Saffron Olive points out in his article. So I would say having a big Modern collection from which to build pretty much any deck you feel like is definitely a good resource. And I would also say, you know, having a group of people around you who can, you know, test with you and also lend you cards is a good thing to have, too. You know, like Katie said, practice with a deck before you want to play with it. You know, borrow cards from your friends, play against your friends, see if you even like it before you want to play in a large tournament. But, you know, I'm also of the opinion that if you just want to have fun with Modern, you just want to play with your friends or play at FNM, you can definitely build a Tier 3 deck. You can build Martyr if you want. You can build Mono Blue Tron. You can build pretty much any deck that you want. The format is pretty open if you just want to play it at that level. It's pretty much just what you make it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Chris brought up a really good point of sort of, you know, managing your expectations. You know, anytime I see articles like this, I get a little leery because they always seem to walk the line of almost entitlement of, I should be able to play Jund. I should be able to have Tarmogoyf. And, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with that dream or that goal. But if you're not a grinder, like if you're not looking to win PPTQs, if you're not looking to get on the train, why do you need a $2,000 Jund deck? Like, I just don't think you need that. You know, just sort of being realistic and say, you know what, why do I play this game? I play this game to have fun. You know, I'm not looking to do all of that. I'd like to put up a fight, but I'm not looking to do all of that. And so when you kind of put your expectations and you know, more, when you just sort of, you know, manage your expectations better and know what they are, you don't shoot so high. Like, I hope that's not coming out wrong, but, you know, you just see a lot of people, like you said, Chris, you know, they always say, well, I'm going to go to Detroit. Well, what are you trying to do there? Like, you know, are you for that one GP, you're going to drop a $900 deck? Like, are you going to play any more GPs? Well, I don't know. It's like, well, like, I remember when I first got into Modern, I got in with Living End, which I would still recommend to anybody. I think it's a great starter deck. And I played a budget version that Travis Wu had listed, and it was using things like the Pain Lands, or, you know, where you're paying, like, Shivan Reef, you ping yourself for one, and it was using Avalanche Riders instead of Fulminator Mages. And for what I was doing, you know, just being a weekend warrior, going to FNMs, going to the odd, you know, 1K, you know, nothing crazy. I was able to do that, and I didn't feel less than or anything, because for what I was doing, it was fine. As I got to play with the deck more and I really got to like it, then I was like, okay, then I'm gonna start putting money towards my Verdant Catacombs. I'm gonna slowly start doing all these things, you know. And I think that worked for me. And so, you know, I always tell people, what are you trying to do? And if you tell me I just want to putz around, you know, you can play Mono Red Burn, you can play Mono Vutron, you don't need these things. If you say, I want to be on the SCG Tour, I want to be the next Jeff Hoagland, then you're going to need to invest in some things. And I think that that's something we forget, or that we tell people that everybody should have that opportunity. And it's like, like, I think if you want to be that competitive, it does cost money. And so it's always tricky. Like, I never want to completely discourage people, and I also don't want to spread this mantra of you deserve this. It's just like, well, so yeah.
No, it's one of those things that it takes time. Like, it takes time to get good at
We want it now, we want it cheap, and we want it
right. I mean, even I look at the modern collection I have now, and I'm like, wow, you know, I have 4 Cryptic Commands, you know, I'm getting 4 Goblin Guides, I'm getting 4 Inquisitions in the mail. Like, that's awesome. Like, those are more expensive cards, but it took time to get there. And, you know, like Hallie said, trading in, like, your standard shit, why the hell not? You know, you can have stuff for Modern or even for Legacy if you wanted.
Yeah, so I think there's a number of avenues available. I think just sort of, you know, we brought up the time thing. You know, you're not going to get it overnight. You can get it overnight, but you're probably going to pay more for it. You know, you take a deck like Affinity. Affinity's up to $1,000 now. It sounds really scary when you look at the $1,000 lump sum. You know, you think to yourself, I'm going to hand over a wad of cash and get a wad of deck. And it's like, well, if you get your Nexuses one every week or one every 2 weeks, it starts to feel a little more manageable than just slamming down a stack of money and having to do it that way. And I think people, you know, they don't think of that. Anything else before we wrap up the show? I've got a short show this week. We didn't really have any listener questions.
I'm going to stream right after this. Not that that'll be relevant on Friday, but that's my plans for the evening.
Do you have, like, a schedule fleshed out, or just kind of whenever?
Just whenever for right now. It might be become a Sunday afternoon thing, because that's my only day off during the week. So, you know, if we're not doing something, then I might stream.
Speaking of things we can do on a Sunday, if anybody's listening, we are also going to be celebrating another one of our milestone goals being unlocked, the opportunity to draft with us on MTGO. We're going to be doing that, I think we agreed on Sunday the 21st. Mm-hmm. So if you're not already a Patreon sponsor, go ahead and sign up for that. Give us a couple shekels if you've got them. And we will choose 3 or 4 people randomly and reach out to you and offer you the opportunity to come play with us, draft with us, and hang out with us on Skype. And I think that'll be a really good time. So if you are a sponsor or you want to be, keep your eyes peeled to your email so you can take advantage of that.
For sure.
And if you do have any listener questions, if you are going through a difficult time or you just want to know more about us, you can send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. If anybody wants to get a hold of you all, how can they do that?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can watch me stream at twitch.tv/HalCanSan on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And you can always find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can find me at Twitch at twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. You can find me on Twitter. Handle is at TEHKRIZ. I've started a new thing like 3 weeks ago where on Mondays I post a little tweet about different songs or artists that I recommend. So check that out if that's your jam. My Gmail is yotehkriz@gmail.com. And as Katie knows, my Snapchat is Cryptic Command spelled with K's.
I'm going to have to download that one of these days.
You should.
It's all the kids do now, or so I hear.
I mean, I actually have a working cell phone camera, but mine probably won't be like, what do you send? Like,
some people will like send videos. Like, now that like I kind of told Christopher Preston how to use this, he'll just be like, we're out eating and here's our after F&M crowd, or like he went to the wrestling show the other day and sent me a video from there. So people send like videos and pictures, and some people get real crazy about it and they'll send like maybe multiple a day. It's just kind of your way to keep in touch with friends, let them know what you're doing, sometimes on a creepy level, but whatevs.
Are there any sort of, like, I guess the thing I'd be concerned about is just, like, I'd be concerned that somebody would send me a snap, I guess, if you call it a snap?
Yep.
Okay. I'd be concerned that somebody would send me a snap, and I'd be like, out for breakfast with my dad, and I'd look at my phone, and it's just boobs, or, like, a dick, and it's just, like... Do people do that? Like, that's what I'm afraid of. Like,
I've never gotten anything like that. I say most of the snaps I get are from, like, people I know in person, or from, like, listeners being like, hey, how are you? I liked the podcast this week. Or here's my sweet deck or something. So I would hope there'd be no, like, risque snaps, but...
I'm sure there are out there.
Okay. But maybe we just have different fears. Or, like, I'm always worst-case scenario girl, so whenever I see something like that, it's like, so people can just send you whatever they want to, like, anytime? Like, I'm imagining that the worst thing people can send you, where it's like, Jesus, why is this here?
I feel like you have to be friends, but I don't use Snapchat a whole lot, except to bug Chris every Wednesday, or Monday, I guess, now, but I think you have to be friends with them first, right? For them to be able to send you a snap? You get, like, a little friend request thing?
Yeah, I should actually check that,
too. Oh, okay, so strangers can't just send you things.
No, you're not just going to be like, dick after dick after dick. Whoa.
I mean, if I know the person, that's fine. But, no, I just assume that, like, it was kind of, like, open where anybody, like, you can tweet at anybody who wants you, for the most part. I just assumed it was kind of like that, where anybody who knows your name can just send you things. That's why I was like, ooh, no, like, that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
I'm not positive. We'll need to do some research.
Yeah, I appreciate Katie reminding me of that, because I was like, ooh, I have two people that just added me, and I didn't check that lately.
Hallie's, like, completely checked out at this point. She's like, nah, none of this affects
She's
me.
She's like, it's the shower. Yeah. It's time to go.
At some point, I may have to sign up for a Snapchat just so I can also bug Chris, but we'll see if that
comes. You have an adorable dog. Like, see, I wouldn't mind getting ambushed with random Kirby pictures. Like, bam, Kirby. Like, oh, hello. Like...
That's the best. That's the best part of Snapchat is the animals.
Yeah.
Okay, if enough people tweet at me after the show and beg me to make a Snapchat, I'll make one.
Peer pressure.
Oh, man. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistrix.com. I've also started a stream. It's not very good. You can find me at twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. We have our Twitch page, twitch.tv/GF Bracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.